and it's not a good indication. Yes, we are stressed because of the financial crisis, and on the spotlight again, we don't get any joy. So yeah. Van Rooyen is suggesting that heads must roll. Others have volunteered to roll their heads, so the task is much easier. Honorable members, we're continuing with our agenda. We are going to receive a presentation on the border control post agreement between SARS and Mozambique. I'm not sure who's going to make this presentation. Oh, okay. Over to you, Mr.
Thank you, Chair. That is better. My name is Mark Sonnenbrook. I'm Acting Senior Specialist International Customs at the SARS Customs and Border Management. Let me also introduce to you the people who have accompanied me here in terms of the annexes. Two colleagues from SARS, Mr. Rudolf Mostert from our Legal and Policy Division, Mr. Tandu Twala, also from Legal and Policy, International Treaties. We have Brigadier van der Walt from the South African Police Service, Legal Services, and we have Advocate Dion Erasmus from Department of Home Affairs, Chief Director, Legal Services. By way of introduction, the focus is very much on the annexes to the agreement, as it was, as it has been developed in conjunction with an interdepartmental process and our counterparts on the Mozambican side. By way of background, though, the establishment of a combined border environment with Mozambique has been on the bilateral cooperation agenda for some time between the two countries. It also is a prominent matter on the regional agenda of both the Southern African Customs Union and the Southern African Development Community. Bilateral deliberations between the two countries in this regard resulted in an agreement being signed in September 2007. And that agreement is an agreement on combined border control posts on the Mozambique-South Africa border. The agreement itself provides for annexes to be developed to facilitate the implementation of that agreement, and the process that we've now undertaken over the last year has resulted in such annexes, which we would like to present to you as part of the preliminary hearing. The annexes themselves, the agreement itself is supposed to provide for these combined border control posts, also referred to as one-stop border posts, between the two countries, with a view to expediting rail and road traffic across their common borders. As I said, the purpose of the annexes themselves is to facilitate the implementation of the agreement. The process by which we developed these annexes, it was a comprehensive and consultative interdepartmental and bilateral process. It involved the Departments of Home Affairs, Public Works, Transport, Health, Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, Environmental Affairs, SAPS, SARS, the State Security Agency, SUNRAL and CBRTA, to name those. We also engaged with the state law advisors at the Department of International Relations and Cooperation, as well as Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, to ensure that we are aligned. The three main elements that the annexes seek to deal with is, firstly, you need to be able to indicate areas where you would conduct border control. So those areas that constitute a combined border post, so that you can establish a basis for the application of the relevant legislation. The reason being that in such a proposed environment, what would happen is the border control formalities, laws, etc., of each country are to be applied in a designated area on each other's territory. The conventional border crossing is, in the land environment, you pass through my controls, you head to the other country, you pass through their controls, and off you go. And in between, you've crossed an international border that's recognized. In a combined border post environment, what you essentially do is you take the formalities, the exit formalities of the one country and the entry formalities of the other country, and you move them in space to reside side by side in the process in one facility, so that a person who is now crossing the border runs through all relevant formalities of both countries in that one environment, rather than stopping, doing the South African processes, getting back in the car, driving across, stopping again, etc., etc., etc. The same thing in terms of cargo and other movements. In order to ensure that our laws are applicable, what the main agreement does is it says you may create a specific area of limited size, however you wish to designate it, at least in terms of the annex. And in that space, if that space happens to be in South Africa, we are prepared to say Mozambique. Border formalities as applies to border crossings into and out of Mozambique, we will allow you to apply them in that space. The same thing for South Africa in Mozambique. As Mozambique says, we will then allow you to do your border formalities in a space on our side of the border. Annex 2 recognizes that if you're going to have some sort of joint or combined environment, you need to be able to ensure joint control and management of operations, activities, etc., when it comes to controlling the crossing of persons, goods, and conveyances. And that is to ensure that you have effective and efficient border control. Annex 3 recognizes that when you have such an environment, you will have facilities, infrastructure, assets, and all sorts of things that are established by either party. And you will also need to have some way of collectively dealing with issues around that. Annex 1, as I said, it applies to the designation and delimitation of border control, of combined border control posts, control zones, and areas designated for exclusive use. The methodology is standardized across each of these different kinds of areas. What we basically provided for is that you would take the boundaries and limits of such a combined border post, railway station, routes, control zones, and these areas for exclusive use, and you shall describe and identify them by means of GPS, or global positioning systems, coordinates, geographic coordinates, and or some form of alphanumeric grid reference. So there's a methodology that can be chosen and agreed to by the parties, and then you can, on a map, draw up such a space. You would illustrate such by means of detailed maps, drawings, plans, photos, and diagrams with comprehensive descriptions indicating relevant purpose and use of each area. So you would, for example, indicate that if an environment is for pedestrian processing, you would indicate that as such on the map, and the description would say, this is for pedestrian processing. Obviously, if you create such areas, you need to ensure that the people passing through that environment understand where they are and what that environment is for. So in terms of the agreement between South Africa and Mozambique, we would have signage in English and Portuguese, and they must ensure that the people are informed of relevant legal aspects, requirements, and obligations in such environments. So that broadly is Annex 1. Annex 2, the scope of Annex 2, as I said, relates to the joint control and management of border crossing activities in respect of persons, goods, and conveyances or means of transport. To facilitate these things, the Annex empowers that the two sides can establish any joint management structures, committees, and or teams that they feel may be required at such a one-stop border post, and these may include joint operational management, joint operational coordination committee, joint risk assessment teams, even joint inspection teams. When it comes to the legislation and procedures, we have ensured that the officials are required to comply with the domestic law in force in their respective territories and to ensure that their border control procedures and practices are coordinated. So we are binding ourselves as the two countries to ensuring that we coordinate our practices and procedures but that we remain within the law. It's actually a fairly straightforward statement. But sometimes when you're negotiating something with another country, you have to state the obvious because it needs to be seen. Arrangements are provided for whereby the respective authorities responsible for regulating border crossings may assist each other. You may also agree to specialize in a particular form of border control, and or you may recognize each other's border controls. And that is to, down the line, establish a basis for ensuring a more streamlined border crossing process, where you eliminate duplications, you get rid of redundancies, you look at your process and realize that five departments do exactly the same thing, and why can we not rearrange? And this provides then the basis for us to go, let's rearrange it in this environment. Simplification and harmonization. We've also agreed that we shall ensure that whatever we do is aligned to international standards. We want to also focus on reducing the number and extent of procedures and documents involved as much as possible. We also want to ensure that we use as a primary methodology risk-based methods and techniques and also non-intrusive inspection methods and techniques, insofar as possible. And obviously where such techniques are then not deemed appropriate for any given situation, obviously you are not limited or restricted from using other techniques and methodologies you would ordinarily use. Protection and support, given that officers from each party will be deployed in a zone generally in the territory of another party, it was foreseen that situations may arise where such officers would require the same protection and support as we would provide to our own officials. For example, evacuation, fire, some sort of situation happens, that you ensure that if you are going to engage in a certain process of protecting and supporting your officials or your persons deployed there, you don't leave them behind because they happen to be from Mozambique. Joint control, command and control, this is to ensure that if we deploy our officials into an environment on foreign territory, but that is duly designated for that purpose, that we retain operational and disciplinary command and control over such officials and officers, and vice versa. So that if a Mozambican is deployed on our soil, there's no situation where suddenly we give them orders, because they don't fall under our command and control, and vice versa. When it comes to offences in the control zone, since these zones are created for border control legislation to be applicable on own or on foreign territory, each party needs to have jurisdiction over offences committed in terms of such legislation. So offences that are not related to border control remain under the jurisdiction of the party on whose territory such offences have been committed. In other words, if you commit an offence in terms of border control legislation, then it is a case of whose border control legislation was being applied to you at that point, and that jurisdiction would apply. If your offence is not related to border control, then it doesn't matter who is busy processing you. If you're on South African soil, it's South African jurisdiction. If you're on Mozambican soil, it's Mozambican jurisdiction. Deployed officers committing offences shall remain under the jurisdiction of the deploying party at all times. In other words, we reserve the right, and Mozambique reserves the right, to prosecute further any of their officials and our officials, depending on whether or not they commit an offence. Mechanisms will be established to support reporting of and assistance with interventions in offences. So if somebody sees the commission of an offence, simply because you see it happening because of the jurisdictional issues, it may not necessarily mean that you're in a position to immediately intercede. but what we've agreed to is that we will agree on those situations where you may intervene, and then the steps that you would take from there. Because if you see the commission of a crime, there are various steps involved. You may seek to halt it immediately depending on the nature and extent of the crime. You may seek to observe that with a view to possibly another crime that's going to be related to that being committed. So there are various steps on this one. And because we have the officials of two parties deployed in the same environment, you want to ensure that you have the mechanism agreed to whereby you will operate this on a day-to-day basis. Claims for compensation. In any instance where the actions of officers on duty result in claims of compensation for loss, injury or damage, the applicable domestic law of the deploying party shall apply. So if a South African official duties, actions, his or her actions causes damage in a control zone in Mozambique, as long as that official was on duty and this was all in the line of duty, the claims for loss, injury and damage shall be heard in South Africa. Exchange of information, as also indicated in the previous presentation, the ability to exchange information is crucial, also for ensuring efficient and effective border controls. So this enables that. If you're going to exchange information, obviously you need to ensure that its use is protected. So they shall be treated as confidential. It shall be subject to all protection and confidentiality provided by domestic legislation. And you shall also not pass any information on to third parties without prior approval or relevant approval of the supplying party. And the parties are also bound to ensure that the information is exchanged, is obtained in a lawful manner and is exchanged in a lawful manner. And they shall also be liable for claims for damages caused by unlawful use of such information. Annex 3 relates, as I said, to the infrastructure, the facilities, and those sorts of things. The parties have agreed that they will ensure that the necessary infrastructure is established on the territory to enable the use of bulk services such as water and electricity. They've also agreed to establish the required road and rail infrastructure in terms of commonly agreed standards, and also any infrastructure for the use of information and communications technology. They've also agreed that such infrastructure should ensure that the outward and inward movement across the border is separated, and also to ensure that there is effective access control to and from the control zone. The control zone must be distinct from any other environment around it. In relation to establishing ownership, use and access, ownership will vest in the territory, in the party on its territory such as erected. And the parties have also agreed that a register should be maintained of all such one-stop border post infrastructure, facilities and amenities, which shall include the respective ownership of each of such. In the event that facilities are to be closed, it is also ensured that this shall be done by common agreement. In other words, it's not a unilateral decision. Such facilities shall also not be summarily demolished, and compensation shall be on agreed terms. In terms of access control, that is also something that needs to be implemented. I mean, it's been agreed that it's vital to ensure proper access control. In relation to such facilities that are established and infrastructure, the parties will also agree on which of such facilities and infrastructure they will share, as opposed to those which shall be retained for exclusive use. And they shall also, in the event of sharing, agree on respective rights and responsibilities. When it comes to the movable assets, parties are required to agree on measures to monitor and manage the installation of such movable assets to be used for border control. And they shall also be responsible or remain responsible for maintenance, upkeep and replacement of such assets that they themselves have installed. The parties may further agree to establish a centralized information and communication technology system to support exchange of information for border control purposes. Management and maintenance. The parties are required to develop a mechanism for ensuring joint management and maintenance of all infrastructure facilities, etc. They're also required to develop any measures for controlling access by any service providers to such areas, given that a South African service provider may be required to an environment that is physically located on the other side of the border, but is a South African processing environment, for example. A mechanism for the apportioning of any costs of joint management and maintenance also needs to be developed. And that is it. In terms of the annexes themselves.
Thank you. Honourable members, any comments? Van Rooyen, Tetwa, and George. Matlamin. Yes, Van Rooyen.
It felt like I'm in another portfolio committee. This is more of your home affairs portfolio stuff. I'm not sure. I have tried to pick up some issues in as far as taxation is concerned, but hey, I struggled. I'm not sure why all of a sudden SARS now is championing this process. Because in as far as I'm concerned, your mandate is limited to taxation, nothing else. So could I please get the clarity? Because I didn't find an area where I can zoom in, and I'm just looking at SARS for support service. Can't be the champion in this process. Thank you.
In that order, honourable members, I think it was Ntetwa and then George.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Let me zoom into this Home Affairs issue. Information sometimes
SARS,
is out.
SARS is the institution that is making the presentation, honourable members.
Thanks, Chair, but some of the issues really covers a lot on the Home Affairs matter. We really appreciate to have a bite on Home Affairs matters. But one thing I want to ask, how are we going to rectify this issue of having these borders not having one and the same information? Let me make an example, Chair. You pass with your car, let's say, on your Golela border, South Africa, Swaziland. But when you get to going to Nelspruit, you pass the other border or on Malelane, then you've got a problem with the car. They say this car, you don't have necessary papers, yet it's the very same car that we have gone through in one border. In Mozambique especially, sometimes the civilians are much better than the police. You pass that border post going to Mozambique, you sometimes ask a logbook for the car, you produce it. On the road, you get a roadblock. A police, you don't know where there is a police, just people coming from the trees with not proper uniform, but you could see they are police. They ask you other document beside the logbook that you have been checked in on the entry point. If you don't produce that, you better pay something there, because if you don't, they will take your car. Once you go to court and look for your car, you are lucky if you will find your car with still with four wheels in the police station. It's an experience that we're experiencing in Mozambique. You will talk to them. The question of language. Do you agree about language, particularly on the police force? At one stage, they will speak with you in English. It's fine, they understand you. But if they want to arrest you, they don't understand English, then they speak Portuguese. And at that time, you lose most of your valuables, including the tires, your spare tire, or whatever that is interesting in your car when you get it back after 2 hours, not even knowing the crime that you have committed. This thing has happened in Mozambique. The last one, Chair, I'm talking about the experience. We once went to some of these people. You are called, you pay a tax in the border. They call it take insurance in the border. You said your car is insured. If you don't pay that tax, you must know that you get a roadblock on the road just to stop you because you did not pay a tax. The last, very last one, Chair. There are papers to be filled in the border when you fill it in. Once you fill in yourself, you'll be always be turned back. It's not correct. It's not correct. Even when they, where they ask you, what is your name, you write Enoch Mteto. But because you did not give it to this chap that is sitting there to fill it in for you, we are not going to pass through until you take your papers. To somebody else, you give that person 150 rand for filling in forms for you. And it becomes official in Mozambique. I don't know how to make a relationship with such countries like that. Thank you.
Dr. George.
Thank you, Chairperson. I understand the purpose of this joint agreement is to make it easier for trade to occur in the Southern African region, and I think that is a very good idea in principle, because at the moment I think there are terrible bottlenecks that arise which interfere. Obviously it's necessary to make sure that all the other problems around that can be resolved. So my question is, do we have any other agreements or arrangements like this in place from which we can learn? If not, then, you know, is there a plan to make sure that there aren't any unintended consequences? And then secondly, who will pay for this? Is it a joint venture? Is it South Africa that will pay? Or is it Mozambique? Or is it both? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Chair. At least I do understand this is a preliminary. If I were to take it in medicine, I was going to say it's a premature vision or activity or initiative. I look at the annex, annexes, and like what Honorable George has said, it, for me, I don't get the basis from where to the annexes. I mean, maybe it's because like what the other honorable members are saying, we are lost. But somehow I do understand that SARS has to be there for the sake of the customs. We need to be there. But you are taking us towards the end of the process. There are agreements that you are referring us to, which you are not aware of. You are, there are clauses within the agreement that you are referring us to as a scoff and which we don't even have a clue. Now, having said that, you keep on referring that the authorities will be, there will be some negotiations between the authorities that will be elected or whoever, by whoever. Now, the question is, won't it be enough maybe if the team goes back and to provide us with a very comprehensive preliminary presentation which says, because we're going for census 2011 and here you're talking about alphanumeric, so references using what, using which data, the data which is, I mean it's a long and old one. So if we get a very valid information and understand, if we're talking about the global positioning systems, which are those systems are we referring to? I am also blank. And as a result, I don't think I will be of good effective to contribute towards these annexes, the three especially annexes that they presented to me, Honorable Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Members. Mr. Mark, I also have three questions. They are not necessarily specific on the Mozambique agreement, but I just want to check. I think in 2008 or 9, there was an announcement that was made by government to establish a border management agency. My question, therefore, is how these agreements fit into the workings of the border management agency, if it's in existence or is still in papers. If it's not in existence, are there any plans to ensure that whatever is done at this level fits into the Border Management Agency vision. The second one, I've recently visited Lesotho and Swaziland, and I was unable to see the borders as to where South Africa ends and where Swaziland begins. I will make an example that in KwaZulu-Natal, Ngwavuma area, we have young people there who school in Swaziland. And Swaziland kids schooling in KwaZulu-Natal, and they travel freely in the morning and afternoon. They don't have to produce anything. We buy petrol in Swaziland, and Swaziland people trade in KwaZulu-Natal. They don't pay anything because there's no clear boundary to say you are now in South Africa, besides knowing that Umadlamini, that side is a Zulu, and I'm a Swati on this other side. So I just want to check if we as a country, we have defined our own borders so that we have clarity in terms of the interventions that we are bringing forward. The last one, this one is specific on Mozambique. I just want to check if we have the same legal framework as Mozambique. Let's say the officials deployed by Mozambique to the center, wherever that center is, commit a serious offense in terms of our own legal framework. But if you look at it in terms of the legal framework of Mozambique, it's not that serious. So how do we then deal with those issues if their framework is not the same as ours? The last one, Honorable George did touch on it. I just wanted to check what are the implications, financial implications of this arrangement to the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There are a fair number of issues. So where shall we start? I think to go to the first issue about why is this appearing before this portfolio committee. SARS has the Border Control Operational Coordinating Committee as one of its structures. And the function of that is to try, insofar as possible, in terms of our ports of entry, to ensure that there is coordination of our operations as various departments responsible for regulating cross-border movement and controlling such. In terms of this annex process, it was agreed that we would establish an interdepartmental team. So SARS wrote to the various directors general, and we requested resources, legal resources, with a mandate to proceed on these annexes. And our presence before the committee is simply because we have all been working in the process that SARS has been involved in. Yes, the issues also touch on the issues of various other portfolio committees, but because this is an agreement that's being, in a sense, by agreement, SARS is trying to take it through all the relevant processes for it to be signed, etc. That is why it is appearing before the portfolio committee. In terms of the issue of the borders not having the same information, sorry, Jay.
Just as a follow-up, why SARS not Home Affairs? Because I'm still arguing SARS is a support service. I mean, the role that you play in this process is very minimal. Why SARS not Home Affairs? SARS, in my take, is the Home Affairs that must see that this process goes through for approval and all those things. And SARS and many other support services like SAPS will then come in as a support service. So why SARS not Home Affairs? That's my basic question, you know. Not to say why you are here. I understand why you are here, because you do have a role to play in this bigger process. My main concern is that you seem to be driving this process at the expense of the people who are constitutionally mandated to do such. And obviously, maybe at the end of our deliberations, we might make a determination that we need a joint committee sitting, because this issue cuts across various committees, you know. Thank you, Chair.
You can respond or continue with your responses as you have arranged them, and towards the end you address the follow-up questions.
Thank you, Chair. I think if we get to the follow-up question later, let me just run through all the members' questions if I can. The one-stop border post or a combined border post between South Africa and Mozambique is not necessarily going to resolve all the current operational challenges we have at all our border posts. I mean, that is a far bigger process. What we will seek to achieve at that specific border post, or at least in terms of our border with Mozambique and South Africa, is that we create an environment where we have streamlined processing, streamlined controls, and we eliminate duplication, we eliminate redundancies, we remove some of the enforcement gaps that have arisen in terms of conventional border crossings, etc. So that will be the focus of the work once we can get these annexes and everything in place, because we need the bilateral legal framework in place for us to then to establish the relevant operations, etc. On the issue of, I mean, in terms of the issues that you raised, the formalities, the informal service providers that you're required to use, otherwise your application is not accepted. Again, as I say, the one-stop border post in and of itself will be an environment where, if such activities occur, we might now be better placed to intervene in those, to limit them, to clamp down on them. Whereas at the moment, we have no means to assist in that regard because it all happens on the other side of an international borderline in another facility. But we will create an environment where it becomes a lot easier now to ensure oversight and control of operations at that border post environment. If that answers the Honourable Member's concerns in that regard. In terms of the issue of making trade easier, the question was whether there are any other such arrangements in place. South Africa at the moment does not have any other such arrangements in place, but there are examples of such arrangements. The United Kingdom and France, for example, when it comes to traffic through the Channel on rail, they have something called the Sangat Protocol, where they have arrangements that the UK and French officials are on each other's territory to ensure irrelevant border controls and formalities. There are other jurisdictions which also have such. We have between Zimbabwe and Zambia, for example, at Chirundu, on the basis of a bilateral framework and domestic legal frameworks, that they are working towards ensuring a one-stop border post environment. It has been built, and they are... I'm actually not too sure at what stage they are in terms of implementation, but our understanding is that they are implementing one-stop border post between the two of them. Kenya most recently has announced, I think, something like five or nine such border posts that they intend to put in place with Uganda and others. So there are possibilities out there. For South Africa, these are the first steps for ourselves. This will be our first one. So we want to ensure that we have a legal framework that is enabling, it is flexible. We are proposing to implement on a modular basis rather than go big bang. So that we exactly what you're saying is that we try and ensure that we don't make big mistakes. We learn from them and we can mitigate as we go along. In terms of who will pay for it, the main agreement essentially provides that each country is responsible for their own costs in relation to such establishment, but there is a proviso that you may agree otherwise. So it may be agreed that either one or the other can be responsible for certain costs on behalf of the other. That is completely open. But the basic principle is what you build, you pay for, what I build, I pay for, unless we agree otherwise. In the issue of... Sorry, my handwriting is failing me. the question about feeling like you're at the end of this process, why are we here now? You haven't seen the agreement, etc. before. I apologize. I did not provide the full background in terms of, I think, the process that we undertook in developing the annexes. Our mandate was, there is an agreement, it's been signed, it needs annexes to facilitate its implementation. Please provide us with relevant annexes. And we established a team of legal resources involving all of the departments I'd listed. And we, at all stages, consulted and drafted in terms of each of the issues on these annexes. We tested those with the state law advisors. So in terms of the domestic process, all of the various departments have been involved in ensuring that their mandates are not impeded by what is being done here. I unfortunately cannot comment on any previous presentation on the agreement itself. If required, I can try and go into it here. But as I said, we came into the process last year. There had been a prior process of developing annexes to the agreement. That process had resulted in 7 very detailed, very technical, very comprehensive sets of documentation, which would have been very hard to maintain as a legal framework. And the decision was therefore made to take those, revise them, and that is why we came up with these 3 very much, if you can almost call it a hook and curtain approach, that we're creating the relevant hooks on which you can hang the operational curtain. So in order for us to be able to do certain things, we need to have the legal basis for it. The detail of that will be resolved in standard operating procedures, administrative arrangements, the committees and all that sort of thing. That will be the meat. But we try to just create the hook on the basis of which we can then start operating on that basis. Regrettably, I'm not sure how to resolve the issue of the prior information. If you want, I can go into the agreement itself. The issue of the GPS system, it's just simply that if you're going to be applying a law in a particular space, you must make sure you know exactly where that space is. And what it will mean in practice is, with the Surveyor General, what we will be doing is, all persons involved in the process will go, in this space, we are going to do this. That will be mapped using the GPS coordinates, and that will then be defined as the area for that purpose. And that will be the purpose. If anything happens outside of that area, that law will not apply. See it this way. If somebody wants to apply the Mozambican customs law, in that space, and it happens to be on South African territory, it must happen within a defined space. If they try and apply that law outside of that space, it's not applicable anymore. They have no authority or jurisdiction outside of that space. We're allowing them in that very specific space to, at that point in the process, you may now apply your law and not before. And that's where the GPS systems comes in. So you will basically take a map, and the GPS will tell you that point constitutes the boundaries of this environment. And it's just so that there's clarity, if ever it is challenged later on, why did you allow that decision there, or why did that happen there? In terms of the chair's questions on the Border Management Agency, I think that in some sense this process is not directly related to the establishment or not of a border agency. Such a border agency has not been established. Whichever mechanism is used to manage our borders at any point in the future, the idea is that what this agreement simply does is, in terms of our border arrangements with Mozambique, we want a legal basis to be able to say, whether it's Home Affairs, whether it's SARS, whether it's some new institution called the BMA, whoever it is, in terms of managing any aspect of our border control and regulations, that they have the basis for the relations with Mozambique. So this would slot into any arrangement the government decides to implement in future. In terms terms of the clarity on the borders, I believe that in terms of our borderline with Mozambique, it's clear. There is no disputed territory as such in terms of the border crossing. The border post environment itself, I think, is fairly clear as well. So we don't foresee any concerns in that regard. And I think in terms of the follow-up question, why SARS? We have a mandated role in terms of the international movement of goods and also then the conveyances that carry such goods and the people that move the conveyances and carry such goods. So SARS Customs does have a central role in the international movement of goods, people and conveyances. In terms of the processing side of it, you are correct. There are certain processing administrative arrangements around to that. But there are also control issues around that. So when it comes to attempts at misdeclaration, underdeclaration, non-declaration, all these sorts of issues, they're also part of the SARS Customs mandate. In parallel to that, you have the immigration mandate in terms of ensuring that the people who enter and leave this country through our border posts are formally and properly processed in that regard. So, in essence, it's two sides of a border crossing process that come together when goods, people, and their conveyances cross our borders through our ports. And I think in terms of why we are here again, it is because it was agreed to us playing that role. We did not force it on ourselves, if I can put it in those terms. I mean, it's a process agreed to by the relevant directors general. They put in place the relevant resources, and the focus was simple, that for all of us, we will put this thing in place. It is of a multidisciplinary nature, and at the end of the day, anybody could have, out of all the ages, could have been sort of the center of the process, or the one that coordinated it, and it just fell on us to coordinate that for this purpose. I don't know if that also.
Thank you for the responses. Is there anyone from the team who wants to justify his traveling to Cape Town today? Yes, 10 o'clock.
Chair, we've been well represented. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I didn't get
from
that.
From my side, Chair, from the police, we also have to echo that sentiment. Thanks for Mr. Funnebrook's presentation.
Okay.
I was going to echo the same thing.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Mthethwa and Mahlamini.
Chair, I just want to know, is this just the beginning? Are you going to do the same thing with all the border posts, like Zimbabwe, Botswana, Namibia, and the rest?
Honorable Tubazana.
Thank you, Chair. No, there's an answer from your question that I did not get. Maybe I thought SAPS was going to answer the legalities. As far as the legal practices that are happening at Mozambique in relationship with ours, that I didn't get. Maybe I missed it, but can I get an answer? It was the chair's question. Thank you.
Okay. You can respond to the two follow-up questions.
I think to the second question, my apologies, you're quite correct. I did not touch on that specific issue. It is clear that there are different legal frameworks in place in both countries. I mean, as two sovereign nations with different histories, it's a matter of course. When it comes to the application of the law, however, and I think we have been through this debate many, many times with relevant departments here and with our state law advisors. The essential point is that when you establish such an environment as a control zone, you are not taking all the laws of Mozambique and saying they're all applicable in this space. You're saying as long as the law applies to the need to cross a border, that you may apply in this space. So you don't take the criminal jurisdiction and apply it here. You take the, if an offence constitutes an offence in terms of the Immigration Act of Mozambique, the Customs Act of Mozambique, we're saying, fine, in that case, you may intervene. Anything else is excluded. And the same thing for us on their side as well. And it's because we are not ceding any territory to anyone. We're not giving them South African territory. They're not giving us Mozambican territory. They're simply saying, by all means, process here, control here. Because process can lead to control if something has gone wrong. If that maybe addresses your concern in that regard. The issue of whether we're going to be doing this at all border posts, that may be beyond my mandate, but I am aware that, as I said before, within the Southern African Development Community as a whole, SADC, and within SACU, this is on the agenda in terms of the member countries. There have been discussions, I'm aware, with Zimbabwe and others on these sorts of things, but I would hesitate to commit or comment on any specific arrangements at this point. I think our focus right now is to get such an arrangement up and going with Mozambique, because I think it will teach us valuable lessons that we can apply on any other arrangement we then choose to implement elsewhere. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Still, they don't want to add anything, but okay.
I think just as an application, Madam Chair, to the question that was also posed, to say that maybe we keep on referring to the main agreement that was signed in 2007. For us, it is exactly that agreement that lays the framework for the development of these annexes, because I think it was also distributed or forwarded to Parliamentary Committee to say that all these annexes emanate from this main agreement. You will see if you can refer to the agreement, maybe later it can be distributed. Article 17 talks about that issue. That is exactly why we constituted this committee with all departments represented to formulate these annexes. So therefore they speak to that. And later on, with the permission of the committee, we'll bring the agreement and the annexes for formal ratification. Because without that agreement being ratified, these annexes cannot operate. That's the issue I wanted to clarify. Thank you.
Okay. Are we all clarified, honorable members? Further comments? Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Van de Broek and your team. This is the first, our first engagement with you on this issue. We will have time on our own to discuss this issue, and when you come back for the formal briefing, we'll then put forward our thinking on this agreement. Thank you very much, and travel safe back to wherever you came from. Hopefully not Mozambique. Okay, thank you. Mr. Ron, we are in your hands. Which one do you want us to take now?
Sorry, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Can I make a proposal on your agenda?
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the DTAs and the protocol, so the three countries on top and the other ones, starting from Costa and up to Turkey, all the DTAs, you know, even one document, it's a word by word, they're the same. They are the same, Chair.
Mm.
And if you look at the protocols down, it's the same thing. Mm. Now, I am proposing, because if it's possible, that we are being given what is not similar to the rest, because the rest we've heard about it, even the movable and immovable properties, you know, clause by clause, clause 24, clause, I mean, it's the repetition. Unless there is something that is really, really exclusive and we didn't hear. I'm just proposing that, Chair, if it is agreed. Thank you.
I didn't get your proposal, I'm sorry.
investigation.
What exactly are you proposing?
Thank you, Chair. I am proposing, I am saying, if you look at your agenda, Chair, on top, Costa, I don't have my spectacle, it's Dominica Argentina, it's DTAs, right? And you look, you go through the documents and the articles one by one, it's the same thing. There is nothing that is different, even it's word by word. And then you go down to the protocols, which is Turkey, Norway, and Senegal, it's the same thing. Now, I am saying, I'm requesting, if it's possible, if it's okay, agreed by yourself, that the presenter, because we have heard about this, it's a repetition of what has been, in fact, right on top there. If he can give us a presentation of what is new, not what we've been hearing almost the whole morning, like the articles, 24, I think I'm right.
Okay. All right. The first part was the formal briefing. I agree that we had interacted with that information. The next one is the new information before the committee, but they've already agreed that they will summarize in areas where the issues affect more than one country. They will do one presentation on that, and then we will discuss. But they have to make that formal presentation to the committee, but they are not going to do it country by country. If it's the same issues, they will do one presentation and highlight that this affects these countries. Thank you. Over to you, Honorable Ron.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you for the suggestion. I think that's exactly how I would propose that we do go. These are all preliminary briefings. We finished with the formal part. So the TIA agreements with Costa Rica, Dominica, Argentina are exactly the same as the TIAs which we've done on the formal briefing. So I think all I want to say is that they're ready for signature, and that's why we are notifying the committee. The protocols with Norway and Turkey are also just on exchange of information, therefore they're the same as Malaysia and Austria up above. They're also ready for signature, and that's why they're in front of the committee. The only two that I would wish to deal with are the DTA with Senegal, and in the lights of the comment from honourable members, I think, yes, there's no real difference between other DTAs that we've placed in front of this committee. And what we have with Senegal, and my colleagues from the National Treasury have already highlighted the various rates which are negotiated into that treaty, so I won't go back into that either. What I would simply want to do is there was one issue with Senegal. If I can just find it. Sorry, Chair. Here we are. The one issue which I think is different and which follows the proposal of the Honourable Member is the most favoured nation clause. And correctly, with Mauritius, with Senegal, there was a danger in the treaty which they had negotiated with Mauritius, but which has not yet been ratified in Senegal. Now, what we did to combat that was bring in a most favoured nation clause, which Treasury already have referred to. And in the slide, what is agreed is that in a subsequent agreement for the avoidance of double taxation with a third state, should a contracting state agree to a lower rate than that specified in the articles dealing with interest and royalties in this agreement, that's Senegal, South Africa, this contracting state shall inform the government of the other contracting state and shall enter into negotiations with that other state with a view to providing comparable treatment. The comment here is, in reality, this will only work one way, as South Africa would prefer lower rates as compared to the current Senegalese approach. So if they ratify that treaty with Mauritius, then immediately we would then ask them to renegotiate with us, to put us on an equal footing with what they have agreed with Mauritius. And that's the defense we have against that particular situation. The rest of that DTA with Senegal, I think there's nothing different to many of the other treaties that we've already placed before this committee. And as I say, National Treasury have already highlighted, Chair, the rates agreed. And that's all I would say in relation to Senegal. The only other presentation I would wish to make is a brief presentation on the multilateral cooperation agreement, which is due to be signed by ministers at the G20 meeting next month, which, if I remember correctly, is in France. Is that okay with Chair, with members? If I could just... A little bit of background to this multilateral. It goes back many years and was basically a European Union thing, which enabled European countries to have mutual assistance between them. And that mutual assistance, of course, dealt with issues like exchange of information, assistance in collection, cross-border audits, all this kind of mutual assistance which we have today in our DTAs. The difference is that this is a multilateral. And in 2009, when we met this entire economic meltdown or crash or whatever we need to call it, G20 went back to the EU and the OECD and said, it's not good enough that this agreement is just for that particular section, part of the world. We need to extend it because other countries have an equal need to access information, to be able to call on assistance in collection of outstanding tax debts, to take part in simultaneous tax investigations. So what they did then was they sat down and they re-looked this entire multilateral convention. And the most important thing they did was to extend it to any country in the world. Now that extension came into being in June of this year. The result is that the rest of the G20 countries who hadn't signed this are now planning to sign this next month in France. And as I say, or as I have said, this is all about mutual assistance. And if I had to just take you briefly through its provisions, Chair, it allows for the effective exchange of information and administrative assistance between the tax authorities of the states which are party to the convention. Just go back a bit, please. Back. Thank you. It closely follows the articles on exchange of information and assistance in collection in the OECD Model Tax Convention. The advantage is, by acceding to this multilateral, we get access to a whole range of countries with which we do not have double taxation agreements, with which we might not have tax information exchange agreements, by just acceding to one agreement. And the intention of the G20 is to make this multilateral agreement user-friendly for as many countries as possible. Articles of interest, a lot of them are very normal. It allows for administrative assistance in relation to exchange of information, simultaneous tax examinations, assistance in the recovery of taxes, service of documents in relation to tax,
In Article 2, taxes covered, once again, it applies to the widest possible range of taxes imposed by the parties. In Article 4, a general provision which allows for the exchange of information that is foreseeably relevant to the enforcement of the domestic laws of parties concerning taxes covered by the convention. That's almost the same as the double taxation agreement article which we use. Exchange of information on request, this allows for, it allows for exchange of information automatically. It allows for exchange of information on a spontaneous basis. So this goes far beyond a tax information exchange agreement, which allows only for exchange of information on request. This gives you the full range of exchange of information that you would get under a full double taxation agreement. All forms of exchange: request, spontaneous, and automatic. It also then allows for simultaneous tax examinations. That's where the work is being done, each in his own territory, but they're corresponding with each other to reach a solution. Tax examinations abroad, where it would happen, for argument's sake, officials from one country in the other country, once again, with the permission of the other country and subject to their domestic law. Under Article 11, it deals with the recovery of tax claims. Now, this goes back to the article which we currently have in the majority of double taxation agreements we negotiate today, assistance in collection. That when a tax debt is final in your country and you are unable to collect in your country, if the person or his assets are in another jurisdiction with which you have this agreement, they will, on the basis of reciprocity and request from you, collect that outstanding tax debt on your behalf, and they are required to use the full force of their tax law in the collection of that debt. I just stress one thing: it should be final in your country. In other words, it has followed the legal process of, and if there was an appeal, objection, appeal, that process is done. It's a final outstanding amount. We can also take measures of conservancy in cases where we have a request to assist in collection, and that's merely to protect those assets until finalization in the other state. And we have those powers already under our Income Tax Act in order to enable us to take measures of conservancy in these cases, because often you'll find that someone will seek to make those assets disappear before you can actually collect the tax. Article 17 relates to the service of documents in relation to tax. Article 21 deals with the protection of persons and limits to the obligation to provide assistance. Most of these provisions which you see in the slide here, A, B, C and D, are already those provisions which exist in our double taxation agreements and our TIAs, where we are not obliged to exchange information or to render assistance. We don't have to carry out measures which are at variance with their own laws or administrative practice, carry out measures contrary to public policy, supply information which is simply not obtainable under its own law or administrative practice, or to supply information which would disclose any trade, business, industrial, commercial, or professional secret or trade process, or information the disclosure of which would be contrary to public policy. However, once again, it's made very clear that bank secrecy is not something which can be used to stop the exchange of information, or, in fact, no domestic tax interest. And that I've been saying in relation to our DTAs and TIAs already. The question of reciprocity is also one of the issues looked at in this protection of persons. And simply there again, if I can't get information, I should not then ask another state to get me that information. there should be reciprocity in relation to this, because if that state asks me, then I should be in a position to give him that information. No reciprocity, then there's no obligation to provide that assistance. Secrecy in Article 22, full protection of confidentiality, once again, as you have in a double taxation agreement and in a TIA, in relation to the swap of information. There is similar provisions in relation to costs in Article 26, ordinary costs borne by the requesting state, extraordinary costs shall be borne by the applicant state, and they may also agree as to how they will split this. Article 27, the assistance provided by the Convention does not limit, nor is it limited by assistance contained in existing or future international agreements or other arrangements between the parties or other instruments which relate to cooperation in tax matters. So this is a broad article simply saying nothing here limits you in relation to another agreement which you might have or will have in the future. Article 30 says that we can enter reservations. So you might ask, well, what's the point of that? Because what happens if a country accedes to this and then enters a reservation against exchange of information, which is probably the cornerstone of the whole exercise? Well, they're not allowed to. It's as simple as that. They're only allowed to enter reservations on minor issues such as the taxes covered, etc. So it's not as if they can accede to the convention and then reserve their rights in relation to the important parts, which is exchange of information, assistance in collection. Furthermore, under Chapter 1 and 2, states must enter declarations in terms of the taxes covered. So South Africa would need to be entering a declaration which says these are the taxes which will be covered. We would also need to define who the competent authority is. It would be the same as that which we have in our double taxation agreements and our TIAs. It would be the Commissioner for the South African Revenue Service or authorized representatives. And we would also, in that declaration, need to give our definition of national. And that would be in accordance with what we already have in our double taxation agreements. It would be any individual who has the South African nationality and any other entities or bodies of persons which derive their status from the laws in force in South Africa. That declaration will only be made after signature, and when we ratify, we would then lodge the instrument of any reservation and these declarations which are in fact required. So, Chair, once again, this is all part of that initiative of transparency, exchange of information in relation to tax matters, which has been an ongoing process driven mainly by the G20 intervention since 2009, where ministers, in fact presidents, have enthusiastically encouraged this openness and opportunity for tax authorities to follow up and gain access to information relating to their taxpayers, which previously was not the case. That's what this is about. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Ron. Honourable members, clarity, questions, comments? Okay, thank you, Mr. Ron. I think we've done all the presentations.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you for the patience of the members. It's appreciated.
Okay. Thank you very much. As I said earlier on, that the committee will meet and engage on this, the last presentation, and we'll make our decisions or conclusions on these issues available to you through the Speaker's office. I think at this point in time we can release National Treasury and SARS and request the committee to remain for 2-3 minutes just to deal with especially the first set of presentations, because we didn't have any disagreements with the presentations. We might need to finalize that matter today, if it's possible.
Yeah, Maya, sorry, Chair. I forgot one thing. As I noted, the bottom ones are all preliminary. Yes. Formal ratification will be back to your committee. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. Opuli and Demand. Numbers all to adopt land on maybe to the officials, can we maybe in our next engagements, especially on matters relating to double tax agreements, that we get this on electronic session? It's too much waste of paper, and I think it's working against our agenda of building a green economy.